Right. We've now been joined by the owner of Junior Motorsports, Dale Earnhardt Jr., who also competed in tonight's race. And Dale, before we maybe get some comments from you about tonight's race, just give us a few thoughts on kind of what it means for the team, for Justin to take home this win and have, you know, kind of this strong run right now as the playoffs really kick off for the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, I'm real happy for Justin. It's winning at Bristol is such an amazing accomplishment for any driver. This kind of ranks right up there with Darlington in terms of a driver's racetrack. You got to be tough and move around and defend and be on the offense and got to be head on a swivel out there. And all the good drivers seem to do well and figure this place out. It's not a place where you kind of get any flukes. But so I'm proud for him. Proud for Brant. Rick's worked hard to help us get this program going, and he's more than just a partner. A lot of times it feels like Rick's part of the ownership of the 7 car. And so to see his whole group up there happy and at a place like Bristol where it means so much is a great thing to see.
And right as the checkered flag flew tonight, you guys did announce that Justin will return to JRM next year with Brant, so that relationship will continue. We'll now go to questions for Dale. If you have one, please raise your hand. We'll work to get a mic to you. We'll start with Davey.
Davey Siegel with SiriusXM to your left, Dale. Was the ride up to Victory Lane your idea, Justin's idea? Where did that start?
That's old school, man. I was like, I'm going to ride up this ramp. I almost, you know, if I ain't driving up my own car, I'm going to ride up the ramp in the car that I own if I wasn't going to win the race. I remember in the late 70s and early 80s, they would, you know, the crew would climb on the car and ride to Victory Lane. Of course, I think the last team to do it was Kurt Busch and his group. I think they all got fined about a person for whoever was on that thing. But NASCAR don't really approve of it. It's very dangerous for the entire crew to get on a car. But, boy, it's cool to see. I remember pictures and a bunch of books from the old days about that. But everybody's just so happy, you know. Everybody that's had so much effort and work on the car, riding on the car after the race to the Victory Lane is symbolic for some reason for me. But I was just so disappointed that we didn't get to finish where we wanted to. And but at the same time, happy about our car winning. And I just thought that I couldn't wait to see Justin. Couldn't wait to, you know, tell him how proud and happy I was. And Rick always pops in the windows, and Rick Hendrick does from time to time. So I maybe was following his lead there a little bit, but it's pretty cool. I enjoy being an owner in the series. It's a great series to be an owner in. So
during the race on the radio, you actually were kind of surprised how well you guys are running and that you're actually leading. Going into the race, I mean, what were realistic expectations for you?
I'm pretty low-key on my expectations, especially, I mean, I haven't raced here in 6 or 7 years and haven't raced a Busch car here, and I don't know how long, or an Xfinity car here in quite a while. So, man, I mean, 20 minutes of practice, just a handful of laps, and then go out there and qualify first car out. I was way behind and didn't really know what I was doing or what I needed to be doing, and all the sim work in the world won't prepare you for what you're going to face when you pull out on the racetrack here. The guys that race every week are seasoned, ready, mentally understanding what's happening, what the car's capable of doing. They're much better prepared. I just felt so far behind. So I think my expectations were really low. I thought, you know, looking at my record over the last seven or eight races that I've ran, I'm kind of like a fifth to 12th place guy. So I was thinking that would be good to keep that going. I also think that I was the oldest driver in the field, maybe the only in his 40s. And so that wasn't making me feel more confident. But, you get out there and in the race, so I'm not a hot lapper. When the car's hooked up and you can mat it and go, I'm not your man. I'm not going to I'm not a pole winner. I'm not going to run the best lap in practice. But when the race starts and everything slows down and the pace drops, I can do what needs to be done and put the car and the tires where they need to be to find grip. And it was pretty much straightforward where you needed the left front tire to be. And I just kept doing that all night long and being real patient on entry. I'll tell a quick story real quick that helped me a lot. My dad never really told me anything about driving race cars ever. We'd never had conversations about how to drive a track what I should do in this situation. We never did. And for whatever reason, we was here 1 year, and I think it was my first cup season, and I was slow, struggling, in over my head. He got on the top of the trailer with a helmet or with a radio and was like, I'm going to tell you where to lift. And he told me to lift, and I was sitting at the flag stand, and I was like, damn, that's no way I want to lift here. I can drive the car another 3 or 4 car lengths to the corner. And he said, now, and when the car dropped off in the corner and landed, he said, I want you to get on the gas here. And I said, damn, okay, now I know why you want me to lift so early. So that's the way I drive this track. I'm out of gas really early, and I'm back in the throttle when the car is sort of landing in about the 30% mark of the corner. I'm back in the gas probably 20% really, really early and just wrapping the bottom, sitting there about 30% throttle for about the majority of the corner. And on an old tire, man, I mean, and they put the grip down there and paint the line and all that. I mean, it all adds up, makes it work really good. Every time I've tried to charge a corner here, I think about my dad's lesson and think he's probably pretty pissed off at me for charging the corner here and I should be lifting earlier and driving it like he thinks. But that was the only driving lesson he ever gave me.
All right, Bob.
You know, Bob Hockrist, Fox Sports. You've had bad experience with fire, so I'm curious, like, was there extra panic or anything? Yeah. And
So it started smoking, and I thought, well, I started smelling something first, and I thought, man, maybe that's a car in front of me. Hopefully it's a car in front of me. And then I started seeing a lot of smoke around the dash and above the dash. And I thought we just had some rubber build up on the pipes. I was telling the team about it so maybe they could see through the wheels that they might see a fire in there, and that would keep us pretty calm. That would just have, we just, you know, that would go out or whatever, right? And then it was getting a little worse. The smoke was getting worse, and I had them boys racing for the lead right in front of me, and I looked down at the leg brace and it was on fire, and I felt it stinging my leg. And so I thought, well, I can't keep going. So if I'd kept going, I think it'd have burnt me really bad. I don't know if it'd have went out, but I wasn't wanting to take that risk. And normally, and I think, you know, any driver that's what, you know, all y'all probably seen, anytime you slow down, your car's got any kind of fire and you slow down, the fire gets bigger. And so that was on my mind. I was going down pit road with the wind in that down, and I was looking over at the pit stalls to see which crew was paying attention. That was where I was going to stop. And when I pulled up to I think it was the Gibbs guys, I was like waving at them, and they figured it out and helped me out and get me out of there. Because I was thinking when I stopped, it was going to get bigger. I didn't know what was on fire and why in the hell would there be a fire at the leg brace. I thought the transmission was going to explode because I could feel the tunnel getting hot, but it was literally on fire inside the car. We had a positive wire short above, up in the top of the dash, and the casing on the wire melted down onto the leg brace and caught the foam in the leg brace, and the cloth cover of the leg brace caught the whole leg brace on fire, and so it burnt the leg off my uniform, and I was it was like another lap, and I was probably going to get blistered up.
So no burns on your leg?
No burns on my leg. Just barely escaped. But I was disappointed to have to get out. We was going to run fourth or better.
All right, Zach, go ahead.
Zach Sterniolo, NASCAR.com. Dale, you said it right there. You were probably going to run fourth or better. And you said earlier that the expectation or hope was that you'd stay within that 5th to 12th range and outperforming that. How much did that mean to you? I mean, you led 47 laps tonight. Just being that competitive when you do this as rarely as you do, how much does that mean to you despite the finish tonight?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, if you aim low, you'll never be disappointed. So I don't set high expectations, especially at this point in my life, but except for, you know, certain things. But when it comes to racing, I try not to really get too competitive, because when I get competitive, I get miserable, even when I'm running well. And these races for me are about just coming back and smelling the smells and hearing the sounds and getting reminded what's going on inside the car and what a driver thinks about. I feel like that the further I get removed from my driving career, the harder it is to be a broadcaster and an analyst. And so running these races is all about learning and relearning, really, and reminding yourself of what a driver thinks and goes through at certain situations, and just so that stuff's fresh on your mind. And you know, obviously having the girls here and Isla and them, Isla's got, you know, kind of old enough to understand what's going on and that daddy races. I don't know if that really is going to matter down the road to her, but, you know, we really ran way better than I thought we would. I had a blast. I'm a lot more confident, I guess, going to Homestead on how we might do. Last time I ran there in 2020, we run second a lot throughout the day. But so that I'm hoping that goes just as well. But I don't really – I've come here and got my butt kicked the last couple times for real. Martinsville was real not great. We ended up 11th, and I think we run Richmond and run 15th all day, hard as we could go. So I was thinking maybe I was just getting too old for it, but this series is tough. It's just really competitive. Most competitive it's ever been this year, you know. There's at least four or five more competitive cars than we've ever had. So, but I was happy with the car. We did a lot of preparation. Hosts of ours helped a lot as far as getting that fifth car, you know, some race laps and getting those guys sort of ready to go to the racetrack. They came really confident and thinking that they knew what they needed to do for the car. So I was put in a really good position to be, you know, to the car was good enough to kind of carry me through qualifying and everything. And then in the race, I got caught up myself.
All right, Dustin.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. How nervous are you before these events, and how do you decide? I know you talk about the broadcasting aspect, but is there a point where, because you don't want to, I don't say embarrass yourself, but you don't want to perform like you expect. So how much longer can you go in that sense as well?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think Kelly told me that next year is my last year. So I think... Yeah, I don't know. She just said, I figure, we were sitting there talking, and she said, I figure you'll run these two and then one next year, and that's it. I was like, all right. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I like it. I like it. And to answer your first question, man, I ain't never been as nervous as I was today. I've raced my whole career, locked into every race I've ever went to. And I've never really had to deal or sweat it out or worry about, you know, something happening and missing the show. And that's not fun. And it's the worst feeling ever. And we got here and we've been here all morning sitting around in a truck. And I'm like, damn, I want to practice. I want to be out there running some laps and figuring this thing out. I need some laps. This 20 minutes ain't going to be enough. So sitting there just gut-wrenching and worried about making a mistake, and I did not feel like I got enough laps in practice to understand nothing. I felt like everything was way ahead of me, and I was way behind on what I was seeing and processing mentally. But that was the way it was when I came here when I was a full-timer. I mean, this place just takes time to get up to speed. Your brain ain't processing everything that's coming at it visually, but it eventually slows down. I feel like I was probably as nervous as I've ever been, probably more nervous than my very first qualifying attempt at Charlotte as a rookie. I mean, I'm thinking back, and there's nothing more gut-wrenching than wondering if you might go home missing a race, right? I ain't never failed to qualify for a race, and being presented with that reality was frightening. So once I ran the lap, the 91, all that melted away. I was no longer nervous about the race. I watched this race that they ran here last year three times this week, and I'm like, man, it's got a rhythm to it, and it does. You know, we ran green flag the whole first stage. Just don't get worked up. Don't overdo it. There's not going to be a ton of wrecking and crashing. The guys just get in a rhythm, and they run hard and they run long. And I thought if I could just find a place to race, I would be able to run this whole thing with no problems and run all the laps and get a top 15 finish. And that's what I expected. But, I mean, I'll run as long as I can. I like running one here and one there. But, I mean, certainly not till I'm 60 years old. But I think I'm still feel young. I overachieved tonight in my eyes in terms of, you know, how I ran. So I guess that gave me some confidence to try to do one here and one there for a couple more years.
How does the driver How do you be the driver and the owner tonight and see the 1, 8, and 9 get wrecked? And what's
I didn't know what happened to anybody all night. We came around the 3 and 4, and I saw the 9 car with the quarter panel knocked off of it. And I was like, how in the hell does that, you know, I don't know what's going on. Them guys, my guys that are talking to me, they're telling me the very bare minimum information that I need. So, like, it's usually with TJ on the box, he's giving me a play-by-play of everything, right? He loves to talk. But tonight it was bare minimum. I didn't know what was going on with anyone else's race. I didn't know how many cars were on the lead lap. I didn't know. I just knew who I was racing by looking over the hood and in the mirror. Otherwise, I didn't know much about what else was happening to anybody else. So I know the 7-1, Hemrick's here, so he must have ran good. I had a blast, buddy. I had a good time racing you. And so other than that, I ain't got a clue where anyone ran or finished and how everything is for the championship going forward. I just know one thing. I didn't cause any problems tonight for nobody. That was a big deal for me. I didn't want to come in here and screw up somebody's championship. Everybody be like, damn, Junior don't need to be out there. But so I got – I mean, I shouldn't be racing in the playoffs. That's a dumb idea. But anyways, Homestead, there's a lot of room. I'll stay away from them guys. Yep, thank you.
All right, we're going to have to take a couple more questions and then wrap up for time. We'll go Jeff, Jordan, and end with Matt Weaver. Go ahead, Jeff.
Kind of along the lines of Dustin's first question. I mean, for years you've kind of wondered aloud about what makes a driver retire, yeah. What want to give it up. But, like, I feel like there's less clarity after seeing you do something like this.
I know
like you're almost 49. But, like, now what do you make of it? Because, like, we don't hardly have any answers.
Yeah, Bobby ran till Bobby and Harry Gant, them guys, they were good in their 50s, you know. But it's like it's the car. Like, I'm driving a great race car. That's going to help me a lot, look really good. But it's like that I'm a really bad golfer. But if I go out there, I'll bet you the first 9 I'm ready to quit, never play again, and then I'll hit the pin on my second shot on a par 4, and that's all it takes to keep you coming back. Is that one good drive or that one nice shot? And so the last couple of races had me really wondering, damn, do I need to not do this anymore? I'm really not getting nothing out of it, running 15th and struggling and being frustrated. Then you go run good, and you're like, well, okay. Maybe it's where I'm racing. Maybe I just need to run at certain tracks that I love and really enjoy, or I don't know. I mean, I certainly do look where in Junior Motorsports is quick. But, man, it's hard to turn down Homestead. It's so fun running the wall there. I'd run the wall in 15th and have a blast, you know, 20th. It's a fun racetrack and a lot off throttle. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if our cars were struggling, man, if we were struggling to run 7th at our best, I don't know if I'd be that entertained to run it. But we got a good team, good group. So while it makes sense, we'll just see what's going on, see who wants to do it.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic, 2 quick questions. Will Bristol be on the schedule next year for you?
Man, I don't know. I think it was fun. Funner, it was, yeah, I don't know.
What's it like being the old guy in the field?
I know, it's weird. I didn't know that. So tell me, is it true there? I was the only 40-year-old out there? So I'm 49 in October. I think I'm the oldest for sure. And I text the booth, Burton and them, and they're like, yeah, you're the only – our stat guys are telling us you're the only one in his 40s. I don't know if that's exactly true, but how old's BJ McLeod? He was out there. Damn. So I'm the oldest and the only. I'm like oldest by a decade. What is that? What is that? I don't feel that old. I don't. But you know, I don't. I think I'm fresh as ever. But I that was a surprising to learn that. But you know, I don't know. I guess, yeah. I mean, like I say, some of them guys ran long and were decent. Yeah.
All right, we'll take our final question from Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Matt Weaver, sportsnot.com. You addressed most what I wanted to answer with Dustin's question, but I want to frame it this way. You've run so much late model stuff the last 2 years, and it's been such a challenge to get reacclimated to those cars. Was there a part of you going back to this Xfinity start tonight where it's like, man, I've gotten my butt kicked so many times doing the late model stuff. Is it me or is it the cars?
Right.
And is there some validation in coming here and saying, okay, it's not me. I can still do this. I just need to learn the late models.
Yes, all that. For some reason, man, the late model stock car, takes a style of input, and the way you drive the car is just so unique. And I still don't know exactly what that is. Every once in a while, I'll run a lap and be like, I don't know how I did that. But, like, we qualified really good at Florence of the week, and I don't know where that came from because I've never qualified inside the top 20 there in the other two runs I made. What would maybe make me not run as much Xfinity races is certainly running more late model stock races in the Cars Tour, especially on the front half of the year when I'm not working with NBC. I'd love to run my late model car more, but that means getting my butt kicked more. And I think, honestly, I really feel better in the Xfinity car. I feel like I know what I'm doing, I know what to expect out of the tire of the car, the sidewall, the tire, all of the things make more sense to me when I go out on the track and steer the car through the corner. In the late model stock car, I'm still not 100% sure what I need to feel, what I should be feeling, what I don't want to feel, what I need to fix. And I'll have to run that car a lot more to get better at it. But, I mean, I think I could run that car for a long time, right, into my late 50s if I wanted to and not care about how competitive I was. Whereas this is the top two series in the country in stock car racing. You know, you only want to come race here if you can think you can do it and do it well. And I certainly won't do it if I don't feel like I am good enough to be out there. So it won't make any sense to be out there if I'm not hitting on all cylinders mentally and things aren't making sense. You know, that's when it definitely needs to stop doing it. But right, and so far, clicked along tonight. So I think Homestead, I was always great as far as adapting to Homestead and understanding what I thought I needed to do. And so it's definitely intentional where I race. Some of these tracks I probably wouldn't want to race at and wouldn't feel comfortable or think I could be that competitive. But Homestead's one of the tracks I really enjoy.
Dale, before we let you go, I know tonight a lot of the drivers had your school driving gloves for raising money for your foundation. I think there's maybe 60 gloves between tonight and tomorrow night. If you don't mind, just to give us kind of your thoughts on kind of the industry, you know, getting behind
that. Thanks for giving me a chance to speak about that. So we have 60-plus drivers wearing the gloves this weekend. It is a lot of work to get 60 pairs of gloves to drivers, and drivers do not always love brand-new gloves. And they got to fit a certain way. And some gloves are, you know, my pair was tight tonight. Didn't like it. But so I appreciate the driver sort of managing that lack of comfort if that's what's going on with some of them. But I know we're all particular about our stuff. But Pristine Auctions is managing all the auctions for those gloves. I'll sign them. The drivers will sign them. We'll get them back. You know, back home after the race, and they're all race worn from tonight and tomorrow night. And it's fun to do. The skull gloves are fun. I think people think they're fun. They're goofy looking. I hope the drivers enjoy running them for a weekend. We raise a bunch of money for the foundation. so that's just it's really a lot of fun to do something like this, and all the other drivers want to be a part of it. And that happens across the board with everybody's foundation and everybody's initiatives. All the drivers, no matter who it is, we're at their events. Everybody goes and supports. We might get in arguments or dislike how we get raced on the racetrack sometimes by each other, but when it comes down to the charitable initiatives and the missions that a lot of our drivers have, you'll see all the drivers want to jump on board and support, and I think that's fantastic, and this is a great example of that.